From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made last week in Rio when an Olympic athlete was on the verge of history. 8 years ago, Kosovo declared independence from Serbia. In 2014, the International Olympic Committee admitted Kosovo as an independent nation, competing in the Games for the first time. Mylinda Kelmendi was preparing for her gold medal judo match with Italy's Odette Jufried. Win or lose, Kelmendi was poised to win the first Olympic medal for Kosovo. So how did the BBC analyst describe the action? Quote, "I was bored, but it's good now. I know it's a catfight." End quote. A catfight. Try to imagine a commentator saying that two men about to engage in a gold medal judo match were about to have a catfight. It's an example of the kind of commentary that has come under increasing scrutiny at the Games this month. And this hour, we're going to examine the coverage. We're going to kind of go case by case. What have the various broadcasters and sometimes print journalists been saying? The critics have said feminists are being too sensitive about the coverage, that not every comment reflects sexism. We're going to keep our focus on media coverage because, let's face it, sexism is very easy to find on social media. When the American women's soccer team was upset by Sweden last week, sexist comments flooded in, headed by a large logo that looked like a Back to the Future sign. Remember the movie? Only it read, "Back to the Kitchen." That is obviously sexist. But let's look at the coverage, try to get away from sort of the social media and the gutters of the comments section. And we'll take a look at their actual broadcast and print coverage. My guests include for the hour, Barbara Lee Savoy. She's a director and assistant professor of women and gender studies program at SUNY Brockport. And Dr. Lee Savoy, welcome back.
Thanks so much for having me, Evan.
And Patty Singer's here, clean living reporter for the Democrat and Chronicle, who spent more than 10 years covering professional sports for several newspapers and joined the Democrat and Chronicle in 1985 as the baseball writer and covered the Rochester Red Wings for several seasons. Patty, nice to have you here.
Hi, thank you, Evan.
Okay, well, catfight is, we can agree with that case, right? I mean, catfight is an incredibly sexist term for a judo, and that's amazing, but Patty, what's the verdict? Catfight, we can get that out of the way. Sexist comment there, right?
Yeah, I mean, come on, that's, I don't really know how you excuse that other than that somebody's mouth was probably a few meters ahead of their brain.
That's very well said. Dr. Lee Savoy?
Yeah, I mean, there's no debating. That's a, you know, very sexist comment. The language that's used to describe women in sport, I think, is one that becomes very gendered. We tend to use language for men that is much more about athletics, mm-hmm. whereas we tend to use language for women that is much more about their looks, their appearance, and their roles outside of sport.
All right, well, listeners, you know, we're going to go case by case, and I've got some audio. You're going to hear plenty this hour. I'll read some comments. And if you want to weigh in, you can call the program toll-free, 844-295-TALK. It's 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI. If you're in Rochester, 263-9994. I've also tried to collect some of the pushback, those who think the feminists are just too sensitive, and we will be getting to that. As well here. Let's take the most recent example that people are talking about that I saw this morning. Andy Murray won the gold medal for men's tennis, a British athlete, and it was his second gold medal. He won at the London Games 4 years ago. So he was talking to the BBC, and Andy Murray was talking to one of their commentators about his victory, and I'd like to listen to what that interview Well, what happened there? This is Andy Murray talking to, and again, I'm just going through all my pile of papers. Who was he talking to here? I'll tell you in a minute, but you'll hear. Let's listen to that interview first. We'll come back here.
You're the first person ever to win two Olympic tennis gold medals. That's an extraordinary feat, isn't it?
To defend the singles title, I think Venus and Serena have won about four each, but hadn't defended the singles title before. So, yeah, I mean, it's obviously not an easy thing to do.
All right, so that it was John Inverdale for the BBC. John Inverdale interviewing Andy Murray said, "You're the first person to win multiple gold medals." And Andy Murray says, "Well, Serena and Venus Williams won a pile of them, so I'm not the first person." Inverdale's taking some criticism. Patty Singer, is this an example of sexism?
Well, no, obviously he's British and he doesn't know about Venus and Serena Americans. I mean, obviously that's going 200 and some odd years ago, right? We split off and obviously what we do over here doesn't count male or female. I mean, that's just tunnel vision to me. British as well as male. I don't know that you would say that's overtly sexist. That's just not maybe having done his homework before he covered the match.
Okay. Dr. Lisa Boyne.
Yeah, so I respectfully disagree, because I think that what happens here is that it's an unconscious sexism, that it's happening in ways that we're not even conscious that we're doing it. So the notion that men are dominant and are the sport kind of leads to that. So indeed, maybe there's a, you know, leap across the pond. They're not exactly on the same country. But I would argue that this unconscious dominance of men leads to those comments.
Here's why I actually would probably side with Dr. Lisa Voy here. I understand what Patty's saying. Mm. But this is a sport where the women routinely have higher ratings.
Yeah.
You know, to me, the sport, the women's sport is it's arguably more popular or mm-hmm. on par with the men, you know, and again, so all I'm saying is, I mean, you couldn't miss Serena mm-hmm. and Venus Williams
yeah.
and the women's sport here.
I mean, interestingly enough, also in looking at the different sports, tennis is the most egalitarian. Women are paid the same as men in prize money in tennis, and that stands out as a model for other team sports where that's not the case.
Yeah, thanks so largely to people like Bobby Jean King,
exactly.
who we talked to on this program last year.
Yeah, so I mean, it is one of those faux pas that in tennis particularly, there's no excuse for.
Well, let me say this, not knowing anything about the interviewer or whatever.
Mm. Yep.
So is that person a sports interviewer?
That's
or
a,
is that
question.
Somebody there
the answer,
who
yeah.
is an entertainment person or who is covering for, again, I don't know. I don't listen to BBC. Someone will call in and say, of course, he is the Bud Collins of BBC
I have
tennis.
No idea. Yeah.
Who knows? But again, so to me, not knowing any of that, I mm-hmm. guess I'm going to cut the guy a break and say he's tunnel vision and somebody didn't prep him or he decided not to do his homework before being assigned that match.
Okay, and then either way, it falls on the BBC to make sure someone is, even if it's tunnel vision or lack of preparation, that's an egregious mistake on an international stage. Let's turn now to one of the more debated comments, or at least one of the more highly publicized incidents of perceived sexism, and that's Dan Hicks, commentator for NBC. He was calling the 400-meter individual medley last week. I've said on Twitter, by the way, I think he's a fabulous swimming commentator. I think he really does a great job actually calling the action. But in this case, this was the remark that has a lot of people upset. Here's the deal. Hungarian swimmer Katinka Hozu obliterated the world record in the 400 IM, and now her coach is also her husband, Shane Tussup. And the New York Times has reported on their unusual relationship, in which Tussup has apparently been verbally abusive with his wife, ostensibly in an effort to improve her performance. Competing swimmers told the New York Times that after one race that Hozu did not win, not at the Olympics, but at another international event, her husband told her to stay in the pool and drown. Well, now, here's Hozu dominating the field at the Olympics, and after the race, NBC cuts to a shot of her husband. He's celebrating, and here's what Dan Hicks said at that moment.
And there's the guy responsible for turning Katinka Hozu, his wife, into a whole different swimmer.
There's the guy responsible for turning her into a whole different swimmer. Hicks has acknowledged that his comment came off as underplaying Katinka Hozu's own performance, but he said he could not tell the story without giving some credit to her husband, who has been such a factor in her preparation. Patty Singer, sexism or not there?
I think I'm going to dodge the question. I mean, we could go to that situation that we've had here with our own Olympian, right? It was in London in 2012. There was a shot cut with Rick and Jen Scher, and people misinterpreted what Rick's actions were then. So we don't know what happens with a coach-athlete relationship, with a husband-wife-coach-athlete relationship. I do think for Dan to say that again is, I'm not going to go the sexism route. I think that's easy knee-jerk reaction. I'm going to say we all need to be more thoughtful with what we're saying. Now, I'm a print journalist. I type. I go back and I hit delete a lot. I don't have that opportunity right now to do that. So I understand a little bit of what it is when people are seeing something, saying something, and reacting in the moment, how they can let what they are thinking and feeling come out and maybe not be the words that they are choosing, or the best words for them to choose to, again, print journalists showing right now. the best words that they want to use to capture that moment.
Sure. And before I get Barb's comments on that, let's listen to a similar reaction to Patty's came from a pretty progressive online commentary site, the Young Turks. Mm-hmm. They were reviewing this and sort of the firestorm about Dan Hicks's comments. And this is what we heard from the Young Turks in response to the allegations of sexism and Dan Hicks.
I don't know if this makes me a bad feminist, but like I feel a little bit of empathy for him because when you're
bad feminist.
Look, when you're speaking off the cuff, right? When you're speaking off the cuff, sometimes you use the wrong words.
Me, like, never.
No, it happens all the time. And so it happens to me, and I feel really weird, like, pointing to him and telling him, like, you shouldn't have used the word responsible. Like, sometimes weird things come out in weird ways. Yeah. So I kind of want to give him the benefit of the doubt.
So, Patty, I think what she's saying is similar to what you said, which is it would have been different if this was written in print in a paper as opposed to in a live broadcast. Do you feel that way?
I think, yeah, because you're commenting in the moment.
Yep.
And maybe you let some of yourself into this when you should be more objective.
Mm-hmm.
So again, you know, not there, not knowing what's going through his head. And we also don't know the dynamic between coach and athlete, husband and wife.
Yeah. Okay. Barb Lee Savoie.
Yeah, so I want to first of all say that I think in this venue of reporting or commentating versus the text-based reporting, that I don't really think there's intentionality here. So I don't think it's intentionality in the sense that I'm going to be sexist in my remarks. So in that sense, I'm sensitive to what Patty said and to the Young Turks. However, I do think that, you know, without any pre-thought, without any pretext, or without any opportunity to really study your comments, that this is emblematic of ways sports is a location for male dominance, and it's a site where traditional patriarchal values are upheld, and they're transformed in response to, you know, ways we see men and women, you know, in their particular fields. So I think it's more symptomatic of ideologies that are deep-seated and long-rooted in the way we think about men and women versus this intentional sexist remark. But I think it's sexist. I would argue that these comments are sexist, whether with pre-thought or intention, or just by the nature of the way we categorize our thinking about male and female athletes.
The man responsible, the word responsible is a big word there, because ultimately the athlete is responsible for their success, and the athlete will tell you, I've got coaches, I have family, I have fellow athletes who've helped me. Everybody gets credit, but the athlete is responsible.
Yeah, and I don't know the frequency of this. How often there is attribution to the coach. So when an athlete wins and succeeds and they're announcing that, to what extent is there some attribution to the coach assisting that? And I believe I read that that is not as common, that there is much more a tendency to attribute the success to the athlete. And, you know, maybe later on in the conversation you're going to bring out the coach, but it's not forefront or prominent.
Yeah, that's a big word, the man responsible.
Mm-hmm.
For it. I understand why people felt it was undercutting. Sort of similar to that, you had Katie Ledecky, the American absolute dominating force in the pool, the best swimmer I have ever watched, just absolutely amazing. And look, I know Michael Phelps is probably the best swimmer of all time by the medal count. He's amazing. Ledecky's dominance has been mind-blowing in this Olympics. And people were debating, and some were upset about the New York Times headline from a couple of days ago. And here's the headline. His latest innovation, the world's best swimmer. I'll quote from the story. Before he became a full-time swim coach, Bruce Gemmell was an engineer and an inventor whose oeuvre included toilet paper products. And among the 11 American patents on which his name appears is one for an adapter and dispenser for cordless rolls. In 2011, Gemmell put his engineering degree to rest, but he has never stopped innovating. His latest project is Katie Ledecky, who has thrived under his tinkering, becoming stronger, faster, and more versatile. Now, Katie Ledecky in the piece praises him. Plenty of quotes from her praising him, but some said he's not the one who created Katie Ledecky. Katie Ledecky did. But then some pushed back and said, look, same paper, 2004, story about Michael Phelps, longtime sidekick, propels swimmer, coach is the force behind the gold medal dreams of Michael Phelps. And the piece talked about Michael Phelps being powered by his coach, Bruce Bowman. So Bob Bowman, them saying, look, don't find sexism where it doesn't exist in this headline. Barb, do you find sexism in that headline in the New York Times by Katie Ledecky?
You know, I think it's all an accumulation. So I don't know if that particular one is so much a prime example, but I think the accumulation of these incidences over the course of the Olympics has added to and kind of fueled that. This morning in my news feed was something from yesterday's headlines. It comes out of a paper in Texas that is part of the Texas A&M, and it has, you can't see this, but really big letters, Phelps ties for silver in the 100 fly, like big bold letters. And then right underneath that it says, Ledecky sets world record in women's 800, you know, freestyle. So I feel like, you know, the accumulation of these things kind of lead to the fact that, you know, we have this sexism happening. So maybe that's not as blatant as other examples, but I think it's still, you know, it still sends the wrong message.
All right. So in other words, a bee sting may not kill you, but if it's the 100th bee sting, it may kill you.
Yeah, I think that's a good point.
Okay. So Patty Singer then, because Barb just jumped to a headline that I also had on the notes here. We're going to get to that in a second. But let's start with the New York Times story on Ledecky versus Phelps. Any sexism there that you see about the way that was presented as the innovator whose newest project is Katie Ledecky?
No, I don't think so. But people... I once worked for a managing editor who said readers don't keep clips. People aren't going to go back and look and see how they treated the Michael Phelps.
12 years ago.
Right, and his coach. So they're going to see what's immediate, and they're going to say, wait a minute, she's the swimmer. So they're going to claim that, yes, this is sexist. You're giving credit to the man when it's the athlete, the female athlete doing the job. But that somebody who does the research goes back, okay, how was it handled earlier, is seeing a consistency.
Okay, but I think part of Barb's point is, in this case, not the most egregious example, and maybe there is a consistency from Phelps' coach to this trainer who's working with Katie Ledecky, but history has shown us that more likely, if we're going to overcredit someone who's not the athlete, it's the woman whose credit is taken away and a male figure who gets the credit. Do you find that to be fair in your own experience as a former sports reporter and as a journalist?
The athlete gets the credit.
Well, should get the credit.
Or the blame or whatever. But yet when we see in most of the sports that I covered were team sports that had a retinue of coaches involved with each of these athletes. So in that sense, you had athletes who were, and sometimes in major league sports, at the highest level of their profession, still every single day being mentored, being taught by coaches. So the thing is, those coaches didn't get a lot of credit. I mean, somebody more current in sports will know this, but the quarterback coach of the Patriots, right? All we hear about is Tom Brady. We don't hear about that quarterback's coach. So we hear about Venus and Serena Williams. Do we hear about their coach? No, it's only when you get into these situations where the world is looking at a particular event where you have to fill column inches and you have to fill airspace, where you're going to go find these, what normally would be a secondary character, and elevate them because the world is watching this particular person and they want to know what they had for breakfast.
Okay, but you don't see sexism there?
No.
Okay. Barb, you want to follow up there?
Yeah, I guess the one thing I would say is just the mindset of not really, you know, capturing or putting in the forefront, you know, the athletes. So Katie is a good example of this. And I wonder at what point, you know, the commentator, the media, whoever's reporting this is thinking about, you know, grabbing attention. They're grabbing attention with what they think is prominent or dominant. And in that sense, I feel like that's the man. So I feel like that's the default that we go to in athletics. So maybe in this example, you know, it's an example of, again, is Katie Ledecky going to be the one that's going to catch readers or listeners or viewers' attention? Are they grabbing at these other pieces that are male cornerstones that they think are going to pull people in? And I worry about that.
By the way, I have a listener on Twitter pointing out the fact that I missed Billie Jean King's name Did I say Bobby Jean King? I mean, Patty, you can correct the host. My goodness gracious.
This is my first time.
You're talking about misspeaking.
And I may want to be invited back to talk about healthcare and pricing and stuff
call
like that.
Out.
But yeah, I thought that was Bobby Jean. But
yeah,
yeah
my
Billy.
Goodness,
but
sorry.
Yeah, okay. Sorry about that, Evan. See, we left you a little exposed there.
I guess I just proved the rule there that occasionally you can misspeak, though I hope with no sexist intent in mind. That was just a verbal faux pas. But we're talking about perceived sexism at the Olympic Games in coverage of broadcast coverage and in print coverage. Barb Lee Savoy from Brockport is here. Patty Singer from The Democrat and Chronicle. And Barb brought up the headline. Let's do that again here. You grabbed the AP headline. So this is a headline we saw in a lot of places because it was an AP headline. And the big headline, this was on the morning after Michael Phelps and Katie Ledecky were both racing. Now, for Phelps, it happened to be what is probably his last individual race. And he took a silver. He did not win. He tied for silver. Katie Ledecky, meanwhile, goes out, not only sets an Olympic record in the 800 meter, but wins at such a dominant degree that you might have seen some of the pictures. It's staggering. Mm-hmm. She was almost a full length of the pool ahead of everybody else. I've never seen anything like it. And Barb points out the fact that the big AP headline was Phelps ties for silver in 100 fly. And then smaller, the subhead, by the way, Ledecky sets world record for 800 freestyle. But Patty Singer, sports reporter, the sports reporter in you, does it say that Phelps should get the prominent place because this might be his last race and medal-wise he's the greatest swimmer ever?
No, he didn't win.
So that's
sports goes for winners. Sports goes for winners, whether it's male, female, or a little purple Martian or something like that. Sports likes winners. He didn't win. Mm-hmm.
So why was he the prominent headline there?
I didn't write it. Because it was easy, because the attention was more on him.
But do you see sexism there?
Because somebody wasn't thinking.
Do you see sexism there?
I see not thinking. Now, let's go into what is not thinking and what is sexism. You know, what is turning your brain off and what is sexism? Now, do we want to define something is sexist, something is racist, something is ageist, something is weightist or heightist, whatever your ist is. Mm-hmm. By a deliberate action or thought that I am going to reduce something to lesser, or is it the fact that my brain was still in the coffee break room when I wrote this, and I didn't realize any implications to this? So we can argue, you know, what is sexist, what is racist, what is all that, versus what is just not thinking about the implications and not saying this person won, this person should be ahead.
Yeah, so I think there's got to be more accountability and responsibility for, you know, this job. So if you're not thinking, if you're not prepared, if you're not sure, I don't think that should hit the headlines and be broadcast. So I would argue that accountability is important. And in this particular headline, I think it's a metaphor for the entire world in ways that we see sexism operating under the, it's really under the radar so that we're not conscious of it. We're not realizing that it's even happening. And I think we must bring and call people to the mat and start asking for better behavior.
And Jill Wrightson wants to know, are these commentators who misspeak bearing the brunt of a history of sexism in the country, or do the punishments and backlash match the offenses? I'm not sure. I think the backlash is just trying to have a productive discussion about what is sexism, what isn't, and what we're seeing on this program. I mean, not everybody agrees on some of the nature, though Dr. Lee Savoy is making the point that just because it is not intentional doesn't mean it is not sexist.
I think that's the very important point, and something that's unconscious, that, you know, if society has operated under these codes of behavior for so long and has placed men's sports in a dominant space, and that just becomes an automatic thing, a default, then I think that, you know, the intentionality piece falls to the side. We're not really thinking about it. We're, you know, dismissing people. We're letting them off the hook. And I'm arguing that we should be thinking about it. We should be calling people to the mat. And not letting them off the hook. Otherwise, we really don't change, you know, the landscape or the social fabric under which we're navigating here.
So I'm sure there are some people with Black Lives Matter who are listening to this and saying, wow, okay, so we have this ist with sexist. You know, what about mm-hmm. racism? What about the other things where there has been a dominant culture that seems to, no matter what that dominant culture does, male athletes, white Europeans, whatever, rises above and they become first in something. So I guess what I'd like to have us all kind of thinking about is if sports is this microcosm for the world, you know, in the Olympiad every 4 years, the world gets together and tries to make nice with everybody. So if sports in the Olympics and sports in general is going to be a microcosm for the world, how are we using this discussion as kind of this building block of society? Mm-hmm. Where do we go in the business world? If I have a male boss, right, and I win an award, does that Patty won the award because the boss is a male, and you know that I had the mentorship from a man to do it versus whether my boss is female and I win an award. So I mean, if let's look at this in where it's going to affect more people than a Katie Ledecky in a pool, swimmers, you know, judo athletes. How do we bring this to the society that we're living in so that we make our bosses, our human resource mm-hmm. people, our colleagues, our classmates aware of how we act and what we say having implications that go far beyond a pool?
Well, go ahead, Barb, and then
I think it's a great point, Patty, that you make, because I think what's the next step here? So if we're having a conversation that's productive, how are we contributing and moving it forward? And maybe it is about education and, you know, enlightening people about this so that we're not just, you know, laughing it off. And I think that's an important piece. And you mentioned the Black Lives Matter. I think when we see dominance is the default. And, you know, that could... That could unravel in race as easily as it could unravel, maybe not as easily, but, you know, I think it's hard to compare oppressions. But in mentioning race, we can see that unravel, you know, in the social tensions around us. And we see this unraveling in the Olympics as idiosyncratic of some of the divisions in sport. And the default, you know, if we say the default is men and we say the default is white men, in sports, for example, we will call tennis women's tennis versus just tennis, which becomes, you know, or football or basketball versus women's basketball. So the default is the sport. And then secondary to that is the way that we describe it by introducing women. I think that happens in a racial context as well.
Well, and speaking of race, it's not just sort of, well, let me just go ahead and read here. From this weekend, the San Jose Mercury News has apologized for what it conceded was an insensitive headline after Simone Manuel won a historic swimming gold Thursday night. Manuel, a 20-year-old Stanford student, became the first African-American woman to win an individual Olympic swimming gold after she tied a thrilling women's 100-meter freestyle final with a Canadian swimmer. A few minutes earlier, Michael Phelps had just clinched his 22nd Olympic gold. A big night for U.S. swimming, to be sure, but the headline the Mercury News chose to celebrate Manuel's achievement, quote, "Phelps shares historic night with African American," end quote. Now, they conceded not the best headline. They apologize for that. There's a lot packed into that headline. Barb, you want to take just a quick crack at that?
Yeah, I mean, it's just blatant. It's blatant in its sexism, it's blatant in its racism, and it's disgraceful. I want to say that, you know, in some ways there must be I think about standards of care, and I want to say best practices. There must be a best practices here that would say that, you know, this can't happen. It's 2015, and we know more now than we knew a decade ago. And so I want to say that's disgraceful that even got past the point of, you know, thought and onto the air.
What do you think about that headline, Patty?
Not good. Yeah. No, not, again, not good. On many levels, that was not the right headline to do. But, okay, this is going to sound like an excuse because, again, we're not a visual medium right now. We don't know what that headline looked like in that paper. There are constraints in headlines. And, you know, you only have a certain amount of characters to fit in a certain amount of space. Again, I'm not in that newsroom writing that headline. If that was the space, could you reverse it and put you know, African-American manual, when could, is there something you could have done to reconfigure that? That's the only benefit of the doubt that I can give them, is that that was the way it fit in the space they were given. But certainly on a website or something like that, when you don't have that constraint, you can turn that around. That's the only break I'll give them. And it was a bad headline.
And I know newsrooms have cut staff, but there's multiple people who saw that and didn't step in to say, we cannot go. It's amazing. All right, listen, let's get our only break of the hour, and we're going to come back to some of your phone calls. I've got more. Oh, wait till you hear what they said on Fox News about makeup and looking beautiful on the medal stand. So let's get our only break of the hour. We'll come back with Patty Singer from the Democrat and Chronicle, Dr. Barbara Lee Savoy from SUNY Brockport, their director of the program on women and gender studies. And let's come back to your phone calls next. I'm Evan Dawson. Tuesday on The Next Connections, the fight over Parcel 5, one of the prime pieces of real estate downtown. And the city is accepting proposals. There are groups that want to see it developed and others who say it should remain green space, art space, and more. We'll talk about the various ideas for Parcel 5. Then second hour, building younger audiences in public radio. Talk with you Tuesday. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. A lot more to get through as we go through this, but let me start with Bev on line one. Go ahead, Bev.
Hi, Evan. I know you're familiar with Osher.
Yes, of course.
We had 30 minutes of conversation about the conversation this morning, or in the paper yesterday, and I don't know if you've covered what was said about black faces and all that ugly stuff. You know, here we are 50 years, 70 years. It's just ugly, and it's got to stop. These girls are so amazing. So I would love for you to come out to Osher with your panel sometime, and let's talk about it, because there are a lot of us out there who are very concerned about what's going on. So anyway, that's my comment, and I'm so sad about what happened.
Well, thank you for the comment, and I'll say we're talking Osher. We're talking about programs in our community to help expand our brains, the Rochester Brainery, Osher, on Wednesday of this week, 1 p.m. So nice timing there. They do wonderful stuff, and they have important conversations. And on that subject of the kind of coverage and commentary that disappoints us, Barb in Rochester wanted to weigh in as well. Go ahead, Barb.
Yes. I wanted to comment about the coverage of Michelle Carter, the African-American woman who won gold in the shot put. And I wanted to say that the coverage of her, this is a sport where women haven't, where the women have been covered in a very sexist way, in a way of depicting them and their bodies as being brutish. And I saw an article, her father also was very accomplished in the shot put and won a medal himself. And the first article in the first paragraph in an article I read wasn't about her, it was about him and how he won a medal and then went on and played football. And then it wasn't until even later in the article that they started talking about her and her accomplishments. So I just thought that was a really striking example of a very gendered presentation of that information.
Well, Barb, thanks for the phone call. I don't know if Patty saw the article. It's hard to comment on an article if you haven't seen it. But in general, her description there, what do you make of what you just heard, Patty Singer?
Right. I haven't read the article to know that. But it sounds maybe a little bit like our coach article, in a sense that we're focusing on somebody who is very important to the athlete. I'm not going to say tangential to the athlete, very important. But the focus is on the wrong necessarily the wrong person, sounds like these articles. One thing that I do want to mention, though, from the previous caller is the language that is used. Are there, how many of the female competitors in the Olympics are younger than 18? They might be called girls. So the language that we use, the language that women use to describe themselves, which is picked up by the society in general. The words matter. Language matters. Are you a girl or are you a woman? Are you a female athlete? Are you a woman athlete? Are you ladies tennis in Wimbledon or gentlemen's tennis? Mm-hmm. Are you ladies and men or are you ladies and gentlemen? That kind of parallel structure of language is important.
Mm-hmm. Can I comment on that,
sure.
Evan? Yeah, I think it's an interesting point to introduce age, but I would argue that we understand these teams as women's and men's sports. And, you know, all too frequently we are calling women girls, which is inappropriate, whereas we're referring to men's sports as men, regardless of age. We're not calling sports
sometimes
boys.
Guys, but not boys.
Yeah, but not boys. Not boys. And so I think, you know, this is, again, you know, a reshifting of our brain set on language and how to use language and what's appropriate and what isn't appropriate. And and the word girls, you know, is used all too frequently in ways that we should be using women instead.
Well, let's continue on some of the examples that have been debated. And Fox News, I think that they just did this to troll us. They had a segment with Fox News host Tamara Holder on another one of those sets, open sets, where you can see a host's legs. And why do I mention that? Because you're going to hear a comment from, well, this is sort of amazing. They had Fox News host Tamara Holder with two guests, both men, Bo Dietl and Mark Simone, two commentators. And the whole premise was, should women be wearing makeup at the Olympics? Does it matter? And I guess they were piggybacking off a USA Today story on this. Why you bring in two men who barely seem to know anything about the Olympics, the one guy didn't even know Michael Phelps' name, to weigh in on women at the Olympics and makeup, I have no idea. But listen to what we got from Fox News on this.
I want to know both of your opinions separately, not together. Do you think that women should feel like they need to be empowered by wearing makeup?
The whole point of the Olympics, the whole reason for this training, for this work to get there, is product endorsements. Cosmetic companies, you're opening up a ton of revenue for product endorsements. It'll be great for every athlete in the future.
I think when you see an athlete, why should you have to look at some chick's zits or some guy's zits on his face? Why not a little blush on her lips and cover those zits? I'd like to see a person that wins that gold medal go up there and look beautiful. Chemist, look how beautiful you are with that makeup. What do you look like when you crawl out of bed in the morning? I'd rather have you now.
I look like a dragon, okay?
You look beautiful, and I think it just enhances the beauty of that athlete. Look
but
at
I'm
you.
Not competing.
You got great legs. You look beautiful.
The better you look, the better your career as an athlete. It's
absolutely
true for men. Look at quarterback. The better looking the quarterback. Brady. You can go back to Namath. It needs a bigger career.
All right, so sex self.
I really believe that, you know what, we all have opinions. And when someone looks better, people support that more. If you look like a washed out rag, no one's going to support. Would you put money behind a gal that won the gold medal and looks like a washed out rag?
My brain melted and is running out my ears onto the table. But what is left of my brain, I will ask Dr. Lisa Voigt to start. I mean, I don't even know.
It's just horribly insulting. It's horribly insulting. It's, you know, in any context, it's insulting. It's a little bit exacerbated in this sport,
athletic.
It's
like an SNL sketch of what they think Fox News is.
But just horribly insulting to objectify women in that way, to attribute their athletic skill to how they look and to reduce them to their appearance is just horrible and insulting and inappropriate. And I think, you know, as I was listening, I was thinking, you know, it's two men. It's dominant voices that are, you know, in these broadcast positions. And that's something that really needs to shift because, you know, as Patty's argued, you know, maybe they're not thinking, maybe they don't know. I think we must take a conscious and strategic step to reposition this so that we have commentators who are better informed, who are more politically correct in their comment. And maybe that's the next step because, where do you go from there? That's like, you know, we've hit rock bottom.
Patty Singer?
I'm not going to dignify it with a comment.
That's a good answer.
I think that's wise. Mike writes to us on Twitter, live on-air announcers deserve some benefit of the doubt. Print and news segments have no excuse for these kinds of errors. But Kate writes to us and says, if you are making your living with words, then you must make sure your words are precise, accurate, and appropriate. So difference of opinion there. Joe writes to us on Twitter and says, has anyone talked about Hoda from the Today Show feeling up a male athlete's chest? I didn't see it, Joe. I wouldn't find that appropriate. I would find it weird. And I don't think Joe is writing this to say, look, it's equivalent, because I don't think Joe would probably argue it. More likely, you have people like whoever that guy Bo Dietl was ogling the Fox News host's legs and talking about how beautiful she looked in her makeup. That's more common than a Hoda Kotb feeling up a male athlete's chest. Neither one are okay. I don't know. It's just weird.
I think, Evan, the point that neither one are okay is that, you know, flipping dominance never works. So it's inappropriate behavior no matter who's performing it. So whether it's Hoda or the male newscasters, it's both inappropriate.
I want to also address some of the coverage of Dana Vollmer, another swimmer, a U.S. swimmer who has won a number of medals in the games in the last week. I think all the swimming's done. And boy, the swimmers on men and women were outstanding for the United States. Vollmer among them. Here it is. Team USA swimmer who won a bronze in the 100-meter butterfly, silver in the 4x100-meter free, and that's 17 months after giving birth to her son. So you have some headlines that really focus on the fact that she's a new mom. And Dana Vollmer herself called herself a mom on a mission. But some of the pushback was that it was too focused on her motherhood. And she didn't just give birth. It was a year and a half ago, not a month ago. And, you know, so there was this push back and forth on the question of Dana Vollmer in the coverage. And Patty Singer, as a writer who's had to cover athletes in various settings, is it appropriate to focus heavily on Dana Vollmer's motherhood? Is there any sexist component that you see there?
I think if, say, Mr. Vollmer was a swimmer and it was after, you know, she had given, they talked about him being a father. No, I think that's, come on, that's a little ridiculous. They're trying to, unless you're up every single night for a year and a half with the feedings. If she's identifying herself that way, the reporter goes up and says, you've given, your kids are this year old, you've come back to swimming, how difficult was that? And if she were to continue that thread in the conversation, in the interview, then as the reporter, you've got to say, wow, she's identifying herself with this. This is obviously an angle that, this is how she is seeing herself. If she mentions it and then wants to move on to other things, and then you as the reporter take two or three quotes and blow those up, you may be taking that out of proportion. How does she identify herself? That's what you as a reporter want to reflect.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, in some ways I agree with Patty. I do think it still detracts from her accomplishment. So if she's being couched as the athlete and her skill set is really prominent, and then we talk about the fact that, you know, she has these other roles, it works. But if the motherhood piece is the piece that we're, you know, we're admiring the fact that she's an athlete and a mother, I think somehow the motherhood piece somewhat detracts. We don't, you know, you made the point that we're not saying, you know, to male athletes that, wow, you're a swimmer and you're a dad. You know, this isn't something that, you know, gets put in the same sentence. And I think that men athletes are, you know, more frequently described for their ability versus the status of their family life.
And what's interesting is Michael Phelps is a new dad, a brand new dad, and you saw his son Boomer at the games this week, but it was always in this context of, oh, isn't that cute and doesn't he miss him? And the questions were not, how do you balance everything?
Yeah.
The questions were, hey, do you miss him? When do you get to see him? You know, not how has this affected the balance in your life? And I had a conversation with some folks this weekend, because this is the one, the Dana Vollmer one is the one that seems to divide a lot of people. Is it okay? Let me read from what Mary Catherine Hamm wrote in The Federalist defending the coverage of Dana Vollmer. Mary Catherine Hamm writes, quote, this American swimmer grew a human, had all of her internal organs shifted temporarily to make room for that human, gave birth to a human, got all of her internal organs back where they belong, gained and lost 50 pounds, raised an infant, and still trained hard enough to make it to the Olympics. I would have that story tattooed on my arm so everyone could see it on my glistening bicep when the announcers weren't talking about it. The story of her motherhood and comeback add to her awesomeness. They don't subtract from it. Yet because we are in the era of public complaining, there are those who must object to the coverage of Vollmer's feats. That's from Mary Catherine Hamm. I would just say to that, I know multiple women in my life who are business owners, moms, you know, dynamic, incredible people. And I can tell you, it's amazing how often I encounter people who meet them and they're, oh, I'm surprised you can do all of that. You know, it's this expectation that when a woman has a child, well, that's what you are now. You're just a mom. And when people look at Dana Vollmer and go, wow, she won a medal. I mean, a baby is not a disease.
Yeah.
Women, you know, are not limited to motherhood. And that's what I found objectionable in my own context, looking at women in my life and the way people respond to them as if, but wait, you're a mom. You know, as if that's crippling.
Yeah, and I'm pulled in by the comments you just read because there is something that is extraordinary about that, and so we should be celebrating that, this accomplishment of motherhood along with, you know, athletic skill and talent. So I get it. I get the critique there, but I'm in agreement with you, Evan, that I think that we are still caught up in being stunned by this. The motherhood piece becomes the, you know, the added piece. I know in my own work, people often ask me, like, who's taking care of your kids or how do you do it? But that's not something that frequently gets asked to their dad.
Well, let's listen to what a lot of people have been sharing as a kind of pushback to what they perceive as feminist overreach. This is from Brittany Hughes. She's an online conservative commentator responding to these critiques.
Beecham called out NBC commentator Jim Watson for daring to say that American gymnast Simone Biles actually flies higher than some male gymnasts on the uneven bars. She went after USA Today for pointing out that American swimmer Dana Vollmer won not one, but two medals just 17 months after having a baby, something that has never been done before in modern Olympic history. Then Beecham whined when the Chicago Tribune called bronze medalist trap shooter Corey Cogdell the wife of a Bears lineman, something that Chicago is probably actually pretty proud of. And somehow all of this is sexist. Pointing out that women are actually women is sexist. Commending a woman for being both a mom and a world-class athlete is sexist. Praising female athletes for outperforming men with natural physical advantages is sexist. So here's the thing, feminists. If you can't find something legitimate to complain about, just shut up.
That's a bridge-building exercise, isn't it? Really impressed. Go ahead, Patty Singer.
Okay, so you talk about Dana Vollmer. We are not a Northern European socialist society where child rearing, and especially in the early years, is shared. In our culture, it is rare still, I think, exceptions will prove the rule, but it is rare that the father will take as much time off as a mother after a newborn.
About 6%.
Will put their career, will go on a less demanding career path than the mother will. So the expectation in our society is that the woman will not only bear, but also rear the child for X number of years. In that context, what Vollmer did could be viewed as exceptional because she trained to be world class, not just to go back and swim laps, or to have a. And I'm not going to denigrate business owners, but where maybe you can close at 9 o'clock, take everything home, and do your books, you know, at home and be juggling your childcare at the same time. This is a world class athlete. So again, she identifies herself with that. We're in a society that does not value sharing those roles. So therefore, I'm not going to get as exercised over that as I might over some other examples.
Yeah. I think I'm torn on this one. I agree with you. And I, you know, as a mom, I would say creation is hard work. It's the hardest job of all. And we should be applauding and celebrating those that are doing that work. So we don't recognize it as legitimate labor. It's an important piece. And maybe this is something that gives credit to that. And circling back to the commentator's kind of critique of this as being sexist, I want to argue that until we have equality, so there's a gender wage gap in sport, there's a gender wage gap in, you know, multiple areas of our life. Until we have equality, this is sexism.
All right, we've got time for another phone call. Let me grab that phone call now. And this is Bill in Brighton. Go ahead, Bill.
Very quickly, and this is somewhat outside the scope, but just an observation. Since you mentioned Billie Jean King, you'll recall she, one of the greatest tennis players of all time, defeated another greatest tennis player of all time who made the untoward remark, I'm sure she regrets, is that why doesn't she go over and play with the men where she belongs? And unfortunately, homophobia is not gender specific. And this also happened to a Renee Richards, a transgender person who graduated from the U of R and played professional tennis for a brief time. I just wanted to ask the panel, hopefully 40 years from now, people won't believe we have these conversations, but how can we, in education otherwise, erase homophobia?
Thanks very much, Bill. That's a big one.
Yeah, so big. Education is the way. We're starting to see more and more of this happen at the college level. And I think if we can start getting into the secondary and elementary levels with knowledge about gender and sexual identity, the more that we'd be able to educate and the more that we'd be able to transgress some of the challenges that we have today.
I would say make an effort to get to know somebody who is not like you, whether that's a different color, that's a different, another gender, that's a different religion, that's someone from a different neighborhood. I mean, we exist in an echo chamber. The people tweeting to Evan today are in our echo chamber. We're not hearing from a whole lot of people who would have a different point of view. And that's, I think, it's one of the problems with what social media has done. It has isolated us. So if we don't want to have this conversation in 5 years or 10 years, let alone 40, meet somebody who isn't like you and try to get to know that person and then decide on the basis of that person whether or not they're worth knowing, not what ism or ist comes after a descriptor of them.
I think that's beautifully said and a good way to sort of punctuate the hour. By the way, I didn't even get through all the possible examples here, which says a lot about the discussion here. But, you know, some agreement and disagreement about what constitutes sexism. I think the bottom line is, I don't think it's an unhealthy conversation to have at the very least. I think what it means is that we care about egalitarianism and we care about the way we are presenting coverage of men's and women's sports. And I don't think at all that is a negative, even if there's some disagreement over what the line of sexism is. And Patty Singer from the Democrat and Chronicle, you can read her work there. Sport, as she said a lifetime ago, a sports reporter. But now, what's the title, Patty?
Clean Living Reporter.
Clean Living. Well, you do great work. I mean that very sincerely. Whatever the title is, I've always enjoyed your work. Thanks for being here, Patty.
Thank you very much, Evan.
And Dr. Barbara Lee Savoy, always great to see you. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me, Evan.
All right, listeners, got as many of your comments in as we could. There's a lot more out there. Be interesting to see how the last week of the Olympics goes. Deprina Godboldo is our intern. Megan Mack is the producer. Rob Braden is the engineer. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a lovely afternoon, and we'll talk to you Tuesday.